podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast, another round of United Rugby Championship games under the belt. A good few losses for the Welsh regions into the mix, but of course a win for the Dragons as well. On the one weekend in the last 15 years where I've barely watched any rugby whatsoever. Luckily enough, we've got the mighty Murph to help us out with that. And we've got Dan Killick, so a very strong lineup for you as always. How are we doing, Dan?
Good, Jed. I did say that the Dragons would get the win, didn't I? Do you remember that?
Yeah. I seldom remember much about the pods. I'm particularly bad at remembering predictions, but I do remember that. And yeah, fair play, you called it.
I remember that when I've forgotten all the other ones because they're all wrong.
It reflects my mentality that I remember us saying that the strongest regions this year would probably be the Ospreys or the Scarlets.
Yeah.
And they're both absolute ass on the weekend. Yeah. So,
and the That's generous as well.
Mind you, not that the Blues were any good, but the Dragons, you know, the Dragons look really impressive, I thought. I know it was Connaught, but still.
Well, yeah, I think it probably helped that it was the one game in every 28 years where it isn't pissing it down with rain in Galway and the wind whipping in from West Island.
I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. I've never seen footage of that area. I have been there when it was sunny, but never seen a rugby game played there in those conditions. I can't remember it ever happening.
The Dragons liked it, didn't they? Because it was sunny like in Newport regularly, you know?
You could see the sea in the background, the water, whatever it is, the estuary or the bay or whatever it is behind the pitch.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that on TV before. So it was really, I think you could call that atypical of the area.
Yeah, there'll be people saying it's faked, Murph, like the moon landings. You know, where it didn't really take place in Galway at all. But yeah, obviously that's a plus. This is the main reason for having not been able to watch any rugby. I was away this weekend and I've had a honkingly awful journey home from the Peak District, which I'm gonna tell you about quickly because I think you boys will enjoy it. And by quickly, I mean quite long. So if you're interested in more rugby talk, you might want to skip ahead 5 or 10 minutes. Or if you're eating your cornflakes or your lunch, skip through it. But anyway, so jumped on. Had a really nice weekend away with our mates who are farmers in the Peak District, and then jumped on the train with massive suitcase filled with mainly my daughter's stuff, and then a few clothes for my wife and myself. Jumped on the train with that backpack on, pushchair, onto an overcrowded train, walking up and down carriages, trying to find somewhere, eventually find somewhere. My wife takes her daughter over, goes and sits her down. I'm there trying to wrestle, get this big case onto the rack on the sodding Avanti train that just won't fit. Moved this one bag out of the way, got mine on there and thought, oh, can I get this smaller bag back on there? So got it on top and it looked like it was balanced pretty fine. Train pulls out of Macclesfield and we've managed to get two seats with our daughter sat on our lap. Thought this would be fine. Anyway, sometime after Stoke, that bag fell down, and the woman whose bag it was went, who put that up there like that? And I went over to apologize. I said, look, I'm really sorry. I got on with all this stuff. I put it up there. There's a really expensive iPad in there. And again, in my head, I'm going, like, well, don't bloody put it on the luggage rack then. But was actually very apologetic. And went to pick it up for her. And her husband's picked it up. And we're in the quiet coach, which wasn't ideal with a two-year-old anyway, because she was making loads of noise. But we're on the quiet coach, and I've gone to hand the bag over to him, and this bag is buzzing. And he's making the unmistakable sound of a sex toy.
I thought you were going to say beard trimmer for definite.
And it can be heard up and down. And she's not reacted in the best possible way, and just gone, oh my God! And just started like sticking her hands in the bag, trying to blindly turn it off. But I'm pretty mortified of like just stepped backwards like this, trying to sneak back to my seat and gone and sat down. Anyway, like, sat there where the whole carriage was in silence after that, for like 10 minutes. And then my daughter's like wriggling and getting up and down. We're like, Bonnie, just sit still. And she's on my wife's lap. She's on my lap. You're back and forth. And she's trying to climb on the floor. Oh yeah, I forgot. We got booted out of these seats because a fella got on with a dog as well, right? A massive great dog in front of us, but managed to find a couple of seats when someone else got off. Anyway, just to start and settle down, my daughter's coughing. And then just goes like that. And I've managed to get my hands underneath it and catch her being sick with my big goalkeeper hands.
Nice.
My wife's grabbed like a nappy bag for her to be sick in, which she's been sick in. We're managing to hold this together just about all right. And as my wife goes to take the bag away, just drops it on my leg like a big sack of steaming hot porridge, right, all over my new jeans. And at this point as well, like, we're only just past Stoke, so frantically cleaning it up, managed, like hundreds and hundreds of wet wipes, and then have still got an hour and 25 minutes sat on the train stinking of vom. To make it back to London. And then
kids vom is not as strong as human, as grown up vom.
It wasn't great, Murph, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't great. It was banana and yogurt and just really, it wasn't a lot of fun.
You must have been hated on that that quiet carriage.
Yeah. Well, the thing is as well, like, when it got to Milton Keynes, people, there were quite a lot of people got off there, and I looked at the bloke next to me, and he just gave me one of them looks that kind of said, yeah, we've all been there. And I just looked back at him. I said, I bet half these people weren't even supposed to get off at Milton Keynes. They just got off here.
To be honest, as soon as you said the word train, I knew it was going to be bad.
No.
I felt sure it was going to be a bus replacement service was what was going to happen.
No, it got even worse because that got us as far as Euston. Then we got the tube back to Waterloo, and then a train ride that would normally take 35 minutes to get us to Guildford took an hour because of whatever it's called, engineering works. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a stinker. So there was just enough time to come in and grab a plate of dinner before talking to you boys. So
you still got your jeans on though.
No, I did manage to have a shower as well. They were the first thing that came off. Horrendous. But there we go. I mean, it doesn't sound like the other regions have had a much better weekend than that journey, to be honest. So do you want to start on Friday night, Murph? You alluded to it there, but it sounded like the Ospreys hit a real flat spot.
Yeah, I mean, they looked a little bit hapless. I've watched so much rugby between now and then. I can't remember exactly. I mean, Alwyn Jones is back, so you'd imagine. I tell you what, this is just probably just my own sensibility when it comes to rugby. Aside from Jack Morgan, I find him very anonymous in the back row, without people like Tipperick there and whoever else is missing. I forget now, but they're not. I don't know. It's a bit under when you consider the riches at places like the Dragons and places like even the Blues. They're not great. Depth, a lot of depth there at the Ospreys, I don't think.
What do you make of that, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Ospreys were terrible. absolutely woeful performance, and it's it was quite hard to watch. Really, they didn't have. I agree with Murphy. I thought, you know, Jack Morgan went, you know, went all right, but the rest of the team, it was probably, it was right up there for me, one of the worst performances I've seen them have.
Really?
Yeah, they were outgunned, outmuscled, outthought, outplayed. Skill level was literally on the floor. Passing, every pass seemed to be behind them.
Yeah.
Like,
it's coming back to me now, Dan.
but I know what you mean, because I had to think about it earlier. You know, that was the game I watched and watched a few bits back as well. And I'd forgotten about it. You know,
yeah, the handling was shocking, wasn't it? Generally across the backs.
Yeah, the handling was so bad. They weren't sort of moving on to the ball. All passes were behind.
Yeah. Dan Evans had a bad game, which you can't say that very often.
Yeah. They all looked. I mean, Prothero, he was making quite a lot of errors as well. I know he had a couple of runs, but he was making loads of errors. It was really sort of uncharacteristic, really, of the Ospreys, wasn't it? And the Sharks were up for it. They were hitting really hard, flying into everything. They bullied the Ospreys.
Yeah,
they really did.
Your mic is rubbing on your beard there, Dan.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there you
Apologies.
Go.
Apologies.
That's okay. Sounds like you're eating a pack of crisps.
Jed's probably got his head in his hands.
Yes, he's losing his shit over there.
I was doing this. I was like, going,
yeah.
Oh, really? Even, I got 10 watts
he was,
in, from you
he was flowing, though. He was flowing. Sorted he was out. Aware of any of it.
they Chamberlain, they're 10. You know, slotted a couple of cracking drop goals.
I think that's going to be a thing going forward. If you don't get a decent strike on your goal line clearance, the whatever the bloody hell they're called, the dropout, people are just kind of a pot shot. If it's 40 yards or less, just have a go, because it's an easy 3 points, like, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, say if you're playing with the wind or whatever, you just well have a pop from that distance. I think this weekend might. I know there was a victory last week for one of the South African teams. I think this weekend might represent a bit of a turning point in the South African sides. They all, even
they
the ones...
They had a really slow start prior to this weekend, haven't they?
They're trying to make out, some of them, that they were adjusting to the refereeing up here. Maybe there's an element of truth, but I just think they've got used to the way it's played now. And I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Maybe I'll save it for later. But Bismarck Duplessis against the Blues, for example. Obviously we know what they're going to bring in terms of the physicality and everything else. But they're just going to be... none of our sides have been down there yet.
No.
So if we're struggling to beat them up here, we're going to get real hidings down there. And I bet by then all their internationals are back. And it could be really ugly for some of our sides down there in January.
Something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think that. Yeah, when you know that that's pretty much their B side, they're only going to get stronger. And the Sharks played a classic sort of South African game. Really hit hard, gain line success, pretty good set piece, and they kicked better than the Ospreys as well, but. It was a really, really dire performance from the Ospreys. They won't want to watch the tapes back again. Come Monday.
Nicky Lloyd had a great game against Dylan Lewis the week before, and then I don't know the name of the tight end he was up against for the Sharks, but he gave him a right going over. Scrum penalties, driven line-out penalties. It was complete opposite of their game against Cardiff. So
Nicky Smith, is it?
What did I call him? Nicky Lloyd. He used to play outside half across keys, I think, Nicky Lloyd. Club like that.
No wonder he took a hiding.
Yeah. Coming out of retirement as a former outside half.
Yeah.
Nicky Smith. Yeah. So, there was nothing. There was nothing to... Like, no solace in that for the Ospreys at all, I don't think. No, there was no upsides.
Murph, what have you made of them prior to that game, the opening two rounds? Because I thought they were kind of clinical, getting getting results. You know, it wasn't particularly spectacular about against the Dragons or against Cardiff, but they got two wins, and I kind of thought, well, maybe this is, you know, the start of a bit more of a hard to beat Ospreys, who are going to kind of turn their Liberty into a bit of a fortress again. What had been your assessment up until this week?
Well, it looked as if they were building up to something, you know. The getting their prime first choice halfbacks on the pitch regular, internationals to come back. It just looked like win-win for them, you know. Well, not win-win, but you know what I mean. Things were going to go well, nicely, and this might only be a bump in the road, but it was a proper nasty pothole, if you like, because that was garbage on Friday night.
Yeah, it was quite a move. I was really surprised by the scrum. They had an absolute tune in, didn't they, in the scrum? Then yeah. they changed the whole front row to try and make an impact. Still got a tune in. And yeah, it just nothing seemed to get, it didn't seem to get any better, did it, at all? No. I thought their boy in the centre, Ward, who scored that nice try from their second row that got the offload, had a good game. He looked like a proper hard nut in the centre. And they ran some decent lines, didn't they? And hit with force. But yeah, Toby Booth's not going to be happy there at all. No. At all.
I'll tell you, just before we wrap up on them, is even Alwyn Jones looked a bit unfit. He seemed to get fitter the longer the game went on, if that makes any sense. But early on, he looked off the pace. As the game went deeper, sort of, you know, 60, 70 minutes, he was back up to speed again, it seemed like. Or everyone else was just slowing down and he wasn't, you know what I mean? But he looked like he hadn't played for a while at the beginning of the game.
I did wonder this with the Lions, you know, whether players would be coming straight back in and making a big impact because they'd had a bit of a break, or actually it'd take them a bit of time to adjust. And I suppose maybe when you're Alan wins at the stage of the career that Alan wins at, that perhaps maybe it just takes a bit of time to get back up to speed. I don't know. Maybe it was just that rarest of things in a rough night for him.
Yeah. He just seemed, I mean, his work rate obviously is, you know, when he came back into the Lions fold after the shoulder injury, there didn't seem to be any drop in his fitness at all in his first outing. But I think he must have had quite a relaxing summer, judging by the way he started the game on Friday night.
Fair enough. What do you reckon then, Dan? Is this a bump in the road, or is this a more accurate assessment of where the Ospreys are at the moment?
Well, yeah, it was a complete contrast to where how the Ospreys have played, you know, in the first couple of games, really. So I think you've got to think it was a bit of a bump in the road. But there are a few. There's a number of worrying signs really that came out of that performance, and because it was a really good Ospreys side they put out. They put, you know, it was not far off fully loaded. It wasn't fully loaded, but it wasn't that far off, you know. Some really, really good players on display in forwards and backs. So I think it will have knocked them. They wouldn't have seen that coming, and I think when you get beaten up that badly, it can take a bit, can't it, to come back from. But I think I'm going to say that it's hopefully a little bump in the road there.
Fair enough. All right, go on, Murph. You got something else to chip in there?
I was just going to say it's the Welsh second row pairing, Lions second row pairing in the last test, and just hopefully that's a case of them feeling their way back in, because the other South African sides won't be any less abrasive either. So we'll see.
Yeah, we will indeed. Right, let's cheer things up a bit. Let's talk about the Dragons.
Yay!
Yay!
not often those words have come out of my mouth, I don't know. But, get a big win away in Galway. As I say, haven't seen the full game. I've seen the extended highlights. From what I saw, it looked like they played some good stuff. It wasn't a question of Connacht not turning up. What do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah, no, they started poorly. Connacht were on top early on, and then the Jonah Holmes try was against the run of play. I'm going to get his name, Jordan Williams. I nearly called him Rodri. Jordan Williams just did that chip ahead out of nowhere, put him away. Jonah looked covered at first. He looked like he was going to be caught by the corner, but managed to get over. And I think it obviously lifted the Dragons, but it seemed to put doubt in the mind of Connacht. And they never really got to grips with the fact that the Dragons could cut them open at any time on from loose play. So, and that's what happened. I don't know. Did anyone notice who one of the match was?
Tane Basham.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Jordan Williams, I mean, created one, scored one. The second one is mental. For a little podgy bloke, which is effectively what he is, he's got amazing agility and movement. Like, and then Jonah Holmes scored two great tries as well. So obviously the second was only a grubber through, but he was just great all game. And I know we're going to come on to it later. I think he's in the absence of Rhys Ammett's tied up with the international window. I think Jonah should be on the other wing myself.
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. Well, obviously I've been banging that drum for a while now, but I think he's, I don't know. I mean, he's almost not ultra flashy. I just think he does the basics so well. He runs really hard. He's a brilliant finisher. He's solid in defence. And obviously he's pretty decent on the high ball because he played a lot of rugby at fullback as well. I kind of think he deserves a crack at that. And I hope he gets it because I've been really, really impressed with him since he's been at the Drags.
Yeah, he's deceptively good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit like that. I'd always kind of thought he was neat and tidy, but yeah, I think the more you watch it, the more you see that he does. But Dan, it's always fun to watch Jordan Williams on that kind of form, isn't it? That's a bit of you, that.
Yeah, oh yeah, it really is. Yeah, he's been hot and cold, isn't he? Really, he scores and does some amazing things, and then I suppose has a couple of tough outings. But you know what he can do, don't you? When he's on form, and that was a great performance from him. It's a big win, isn't it? You know, scoring 35 points against Connacht. The Dragons really fancied it, didn't they? I thought that Tane Basham was outstanding. Absolute great, great game. And really, really timely as well, isn't it? With these internationals coming up now. I thought Sam Davis had a really good game as well. He's been talking about it, isn't he? That he wanted to get an Irish a win against the Irish boys. Mm. He was quite open about that, wasn't he? He had a superb game. Wainwright went well. So there's some really good performances, with the autumn internationals around the corner. And Jonah Holmes, yeah, I'm with you boys. I think he should have a slot. I think he was really good at the back end of the last year. It's probably fair to say, isn't it, that he had a bit of a, when he signed for the Dragons, I thought he was going to like literally take to it straight away, because he'd done so well over in England, but it didn't seem to happen straight away. But he's so powerful, isn't he? Really difficult to stop. Now he's scoring left, right, and centre. Real quality player.
When he comes off the wing as well, actually, and when you see him pick up the ball in the middle of the field rather than just out on the flank, because I think he's able to burst through with his power, but he's obviously got such gas and good feet to get around people as well. That I think there's a lot more to come from him at international level. Obviously, there's a lot of competition, normally speaking. But yeah, like Murph says, you know, if Lewis Rhys-Ammett isn't going to be available, Liam Williams faces a race against time. We fit in time for that game. So
yeah.
You know.
Just one more thing on the Dragons is it wasn't first choice back row either, because Moriarty wasn't there. Ollie Griffiths wasn't there. You could argue, obviously, Wainwright is first choice number 8, so it shows what depth they've got in the back row compared to the Ospreys. And also, special mention for me, Will Rowlands.
He's been really good.
I mean, what a massive difference for the Dragons that is. Because no disrespect to whoever was doing it last year, but
Screech, actually.
Yeah, well, and Maximio looks better with someone like Will Rowlands alongside him, and also. I'm going to get his name wrong, so hold your horses. Sayuli.
Sayuli, yeah.
That's a sign in and half, that is. He's not high profile, ex-Glasgow player.
I think both the props have been great signings.
Yeah.
You know.
They're going so well, aren't they? Brilliant signings.
Well, they don't have to do the job for the Dragons, they don't have to be world beaters. They don't have to be destructive. They just got to hold up the scrum for them. They just got to hold the pressure, which is something they haven't had for, I mean, God knows how long. So anyone, I'm not saying that sounds churlish to say anyone, because it's a really niche, hard thing to do at this level, but they just needed someone of that standard. And fair due to Dean Ryan, he's found a couple.
He has. We've got loads more to talk about, which will largely be centered around rugby rather than any mishaps on public transport. But all of that will be coming up after this very short break. Right, Murph, we're talking there just before the break about the Dragons' back row and some of the depth they've had there. And actually, yeah, you were saying as well the front row, how things have tightened up there. But just looking at that back row selection they've got, I mean, it's strange because it has always been a position that they've been strong in, even in the absolute darkest times. It always seemed to have been able to churn out back row forwards, but Basham, to me, I think he really is one of these proper X factor players. I mean, he's kind of got three seasons of professional rugby under his belt already, and he's only what, 21? You know, he's still a very, very young guy.
Yeah.
And I think the thing with him is he's not just good over the ball and in the contact area, but he's got real explosive pace and he carries incredibly hard as well. Is he going to be in? Is he going to be in Pivac's squad? Is he going to be? You know, is he even going to be knocking on the door for that seven shirt?
Well, there's some really tough decisions to be made there because you've got Jack Morgan as well. There's obviously Navidi just got injured today, but there's so much to choose from, and Tipperick is long term injured. Am I right in saying that?
You're right. Yeah.
Is that a new injury or is that from the Lions tour?
Oh, I'd assumed it was from the Lions tour, to be honest.
Right. But so that must have been a pretty... Because it was a shoulder injury, that wasn't it?
Yeah, from the Lions tour, the injury.
I thought someone said on one of the coverages that he was going to be out for most of the season, which is unusual for a shoulder injury. So I wondered if he got a fresh injury, you know, a leg injury or something.
I'm not sure. Anyway, I mean, either way, he's out for the autumn.
Yeah. Maybe they meant the rest of the year, maybe. I don't know. With Tane, I mean... I'm still a huge Ollie Griffiths fan, but
yeah, I am.
Ollie Griffiths is not on the pitch enough, and Tane Basham seems to be always available, whether he's picked or not. He seems to be fit a lot. You could say the same. I think if Jordan Williams could have a run of just one season, say, let's not be ambitious, just one season without any big injuries. I mean, if he gets that beer belly off him, like you could see it plainly today. He's such a game breaker, and without, say, the defensive frailties of like a Matthew Morgan or someone like that comparable, even though he's a slight fella, he's not, you know, a liability or anything in defence. So Tane Basham, like we said, he's in the mix because he's there and fit, and Ollie Griffiths is not, you know. So, but and that's what's held Jordan Williams back all his career as well, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, Jordan Williams, because, you know, he lit up that under-20s World Cup in whenever, the 2013, when they made it to the final. And he just, you know, he's destroying defences. Then you step up to international level. And he did have a pretty eye-catching first season with the Scarlets, but he fell out of favour very, very quickly. And then
I think it was his haircuts myself.
Haircuts and facial hair, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the one that did it. And but yeah, it was, you know, he definitely fell out of favour very quickly there. And I don't know whether that was, you know, that was to do with training or commitment or whatever. But I've heard a few different things with regards to that. And then he obviously ended up at Bristol, where you're kind of, you know, playing in the Championship for a while, where, you know, he's gonna get a fair amount of tries, but he's also going to be completely out of the limelight. And he's been at the Dragons for what, 4 or 5 seasons now, I think. But yeah, every single one of them has been interrupted, has been genius interrupted with injury. But It's always that game management kind of issue, isn't it? Is what happens if you get rained, you know, they rain bombs on you and you can't quite cope under the high ball, or kicking game is slightly off. I always like
high balls, probably is his biggest weakness, I'd say, in the past anyway. So maybe there is some, like you said about the Scarlets, some underlying thing they weren't keen on, and maybe it is his commitment to training. I don't know.
But he was very young then, and again, I think that, you know, he was offered a new contract by Dean Ryan, and you know, Dean Ryan doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to take anyone not pulling their weight in training. So my guess is he's kind of ironed that out. But it's, you know, the latter years have been dogged by injury, but there's still time. I mean, I think we're some way off seeing him get a call up for Wales, but it'd be nice to see him, like you say, have a season where he gets to play a fair amount of rugby. Right, let's talk about Cardiff, shall we? Again, to bring things down a bit. Obviously, you know, it amounted a pretty handsome lead there, and then seemingly just got blown away. Dan, what did you make of that game?
That's the game I didn't see. So, Murph.
Yeah, over to me. Well, I mentioned him earlier. What annoyed me on the night, I mean, totally outplayed Cardiff and outmuscled everything. Any adjective you want to put on the game, they got done in. But what annoyed me on the night was just Bismarck Duplessis reffing the game. I just wanted to run on the pitch and ask the ref, who is reffing this game? Is he you, or is it, in my thickest possible Cardiff accent, Bismarck? Because he was done my head in. Every line out, he's just saying where he wanted Cardiff to stand. And it was dying out for the referee to come over and say, I'll look after the game. You just throw the ball in. That's all he had to do. But 35-year-old World Cup winner, just dictated in. It seemed like to me, I mean, obviously, just my speed watch thing late at night. It seemed like he was just dictating that everything about that was going on there. They had scrum dominance and breakdown dominance, and Cardiff lose their best player in the first 3 minutes, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, not ideal though. Again, off the back of a loss the week before. What's next for Cardiff, Dan?
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, without seeing that game, it looks as if they were completely outmuscled. Then, Murph, is it outpowered? And you know, similar thing that happened with the Ospreys. And
yeah,
the problem with Cardiff is that we know that front five is. You know, the front five is under pressure now, you know? It's really worrying, isn't it, that what's going to happen against these South African sides as they get stronger. We know the Irish, we know what the Irish sides are about. And
that's the only upside is the Irish sides won't have it all their own way. If this is going the way I think it's going with the South African sides, at least... I'm not saying the South Africans are going to start winning all their games in Ireland, but they're definitely going to fancy themselves at home against anyone. So,
yeah, they are. I think it's going to be difficult. It's hard to be too optimistic after this weekend. you know, really against the South African sides, but the physicality is going to have to be upped. I think I can't see us beating them physically, but we're going to have to really up the physicality and play a really smart game, aren't we, on territory, and be really, really squeaky clean, because the second they get a little sniff, their tails are up. And, you know, they've had it pretty tough over here, haven't they, with the bubble and all those other bits and bobs. And yeah, I think all of us are probably thinking, literally, shit, you know, it's going to be scary going down to South Africa.
I imagine all the Welsh head coaches are feeling exactly the same as I did just when I saw my daughter's face go, and you know what's coming, and it's absolutely pretty.
Did one of them in an interview? I'm not sure if it was the outside half from the Ospreys game or the man of the match, the winger from the Cardiff game. suggesting that they were just getting used to the way the game is refereed in the first couple of matches, and that's why they weren't winning. I think it might be a little bit more than just the way it's refereed. They're kind of adapting to the way the game is played, realize it's very reliant on stifling the opposition at the breakdown, which is, say, I don't know, Leinster, Munster, Glasgow kind of do. And they've joined in. And now they've realised it. I mean, the other worrying thing is there's 2 second rows playing for the Bulls on last night. I've never heard of, you know, obviously because I don't watch South African rugby on a regular basis. But they dominated Seb Davis, Matthew Screech, and whoever else came off the bench. Rory Thornton came on quite early, didn't he? And I can imagine there's, I don't know exactly where the top second rows in South Africa play, but one or two of them are probably at the Bulls. So that is quite possibly second choice second rows for the Bulls, just, you know, beating up the Blues second row. So yeah, not good.
I think the Welsh sides have probably been surprised as well by these performances. And what I couldn't really understand was how bad the mistakes were really basic. Certainly in the Ospreys game, it was just like mistake after mistake. And as soon as you had a mistake, there was another mistake. And you know, when you almost feel sorry for a side, it was a bit like that. I don't know whether it was the same case for the Cardiff game in the second half, because I read that the first half was all right. I don't know whether it was, but the second half they completely fell away, didn't they? As they up their physicality. But let's see what happens.
But I mean, the thing with that is, like Murph says, the blueprint is there. Is if you are a Leinster or a Munster who are massively physical and can get on the front foot and win the breakdown as they have done for over a decade, the blueprint is there for the good South African sides, because that's going to be meat and drink to them, isn't it? You know, you say they've got a wealth of massive great forwards who can do that game. I don't really know what the plan is for sides like the Blues and the Scarlet, the Blues, sorry, not anymore, ding ding, Cardiff and the Scarlets, it's incredibly difficult without having the resources to be able to go out and buy a load of massive second rows yourself.
Yeah. I mean, the comment was passed that it's one of the biggest sides they've played against at home in at Cardiff, the Bulls team. So it might just be like an extreme case. Maybe the other sides are not so huge up front, but I don't know when, well, any side that's going down there to face them. I mean, literally, I mean, regional now is going to be quicken in their boots. And I can imagine, I would like to be watching when Leinster go down there, because that'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's got to be a game that Leinster play in that's interesting, isn't there? So, yeah, maybe
that's, yeah, maybe competitive. Well, yeah. Excuse me, 7-6 last week.
Oh, yeah, good point.
At Rodney.
It was. It wasn't easy on the eye or on my...
I didn't mind that game.
I don't mind generally any game that is competitive, because at least, you know, there is something in it. It's just when games get so one-sided, which I think we've become very used to watching in the various incarnations of this league. But there we go. Let's take a look at the Scarlets, which was not pretty at all. Dan, you caught this one then. What's your take?
Yeah. Absolute pummeling, wasn't it? Scarlets losing 43-13 at home. I was expecting a much better performance from the Scarlets against what was a B stroke C team, really, wasn't it? For Munster, and they got absolutely blown away again. They weren't at the races, just completely taken apart, really, in all aspects of the game. And I got to be honest, it was quite a tough watch, this for me. Didn't didn't enjoy the game. Munster, it was almost like Munster were just playing with the Scarlets, to be honest.
I've been surprised how poor their defence has been in the opening few games, actually, the Scarlets. And again, I don't know if it's just adjusting to a new system or what, but there's a lot of, from what I've seen, again, I've only seen the highlights of this game, but there is a lot of simple defensive errors that are hitting them really, really hard.
Yeah, they made a lot of basic errors, really. They didn't look like a side that was playing together. And again, I suppose the stuff of being out-muscled, out-gunned, out-thought. It's just, I suppose, really at a basic level, once you lose that gain line, once you lose the physicality, this is a similar line, isn't it, with a lot of the games I saw, really. It's kind of almost impossible, really, to get back into it unless you're absolutely squeaky clean on the error count. And the Welsh side has just been making too many compound errors over and over again, such as the pressures has been too great. So yeah, a very, very difficult game for the Scarlets.
Do you worry that back line's a bit slow? I'm a bit worried about, you know, about John Fox and Scott Williams and Steph Evans, you know, about having, you know, obviously Rogers has got some out and out gas in there, but I don't know. I'm a bit wary that I could be a bit leggy at times.
Yeah, Jonathan doesn't look to be moving right, does he? We've said it about Scott, despite Scott being fantastic on the ball and Jonathan, to be honest as well. Yeah, it's not a quick centre partnership, is it? Steph Evans has been, as we know, he doesn't have the out and out gas, does he? He'll beat defenders and you know score good tries, but he doesn't have the out and out pace. So they are a little light on speed, aren't they? Certainly in the centre. It was just disappointing again, really. I didn't expect the Scarlets to play like that. I was really looking forward to it, really excited about what the game. I think we all were, weren't we, last week, thinking this would be the game, probably the game to watch. And they were just taken apart, really.
Murph, what was your take what's your take on the Scarlets to date?
I didn't see this fixture today yet. I'm behind on that one. But yeah, it's worrying. I mean, new coach as well. He's going to be feeling the pressure. A positive you could look for is this four Lions to come back. But obviously, Liam's just apparently had his appendix out, so he's not going to be, I don't know how long that's going to take to recover from. You can still bring back Wyn Jones, Ken Owens and Gareth Davis. Gareth Davis, I don't know how Kieran Hardy went today. But
Gareth Davis started today, actually, didn't he?
Oh my God, oh, that's a worry. Yeah. So don't tell me all the Lions were there. Three Lions were in the side and they got 40 points on them.
Ken Owens played.
Oh, shit.
Gareth Davis played.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, obviously, like you say, Liam wasn't there and Wyn Jones came off the bench, I think.
Yeah, Wyn Jones was having a little... he was having a little niggle at the end of the game.
On paper, they're a much better outfit than 40 points at home to Munster.
I mean, and Dan said it there as well. This is a much... I mean, not that there's not quality in that Munster side, but it is a very changed side.
Didn't RG Snyman get badly injured again in this game?
He did. Yeah. Yeah, didn't. He looked in pain, pain.
They pointed out on TV today that it's okay because they got Leinster away next week.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Yeah.
It's a honking fixture, that, isn't it? I never ever want, you know, it's you never feel confident.
It's a second turnaround, I think.
The seconds will give you a spanking.
Yeah.
And then you back to the drawing board again to face, I don't know they got after that, but it'd probably be a top South African side at home. So that's worrying times, really, with the new coach. People start to question it, you know, especially their fans can be a reputation for being quite fickle down there, you know what I mean? So, they turned on PVAC, didn't they, when he first arrived?
Yeah, they did.
So,
a certain faction did.
Yeah, and Pivac is one of their own, so not Pivac, Dwayne Peel is one of their own, so maybe you get more leeway with them. But they don't want to put too many performances like that in, well, any region, but especially the Scarlets.
No, yeah, so it's Leinster next week and then Benetton at home the following week.
Yeah, and they're no mugs at the moment.
No, again, they seem to be having one of their inspired spells, don't they? So they've started the season pretty well. All a bit concerning as it goes. I want to take a quick look at kind of players who you think have got a half decent chance of getting in the Wales squad. Obviously, we've got a couple of weeks to go until the games itself, but there's no Heineken Cup before the squad is named this time round, whereas there normally is. So actually, this form kind of probably counts for a bit more than it does in usual years. Dan, anyone in the first 3 weeks of the UFC who's taken your eye?
Well, yeah, we mentioned him earlier on. For me, Tane Basham is, after his performance this weekend, I thought he was quite brilliant and really fancy seeing him in the squad. He's something different, isn't he? He's something different. He's explosive. And I think that he should know Wainwright's play very well.
Mm.
Wainwright had a great game as well. And I think that's a nice combination there. Well, I mean, if you could... We could see Moriarty in there as well, couldn't we? But
it's interesting because if you don't pick a combination from the Dragons, it's hard to see where the familiarity comes from, I would say. Because you know, obviously you've not got Toby in there, and you're missing Navidi and Tipperick as well. You know, those people have been absolute regulars, and you kind of think that, well, if you start chucking in Jack Morgan, for example, you could very easily have a back row that was like Jack Morgan, Ellis Jenkins, Aaron Wainwright, who've never even trained together. And you're doing that against New Zealand. And I know what you mean. Part of me thinks, well, yeah, if you had Moriarty and Basham, or Moriarty and Wainwright, you know, at least there is that degree of familiarity in there. Any thoughts on the back row while we're on it, Murph?
Just those you've mentioned, plus Jack Morgan. Mm. I'm not sure. Obviously, Faletau is going to be unavailable. And then there's the two injuries as well. Who else? Oh, Dan Laidlaw is out, but I don't know if he would still be in the side at this stage. I don't know, because he's probably about 38 or whatever he is. Who's this? Which is the back row player from Scarlets who would normally be in the squad? I'm trying to think now. So they got a lot of overseas players in their back row.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Ellis Jenkins is not really back to his best to be considered.
No, I think we were kind of saying this last week. It seems like it's going to take him a while. I mean, I could see him being in the squad, but
just purely because of injuries. Yeah, he could be. Yeah. The second row is in this one area we look good in now, I think, with Will Rowlands playing really well. Mm. Alamin Jones and Adam Beard working their way back into it. That could be a strong, like, that you would imagine those three would be the match team.
Your test team, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your test 20.
Two on the pitch, one on the bench. I'd imagine, obviously, Alamin Jones plus one, and then the other one's on the thing. So that doesn't look too bad. And then you front row is... tricky. Well, not tricky. Thomas Francis picks himself, I think.
Yeah, I think he does. And then
it's just a matter of who's in with him as backup, you know. Open side, Nicky Lloyd-Smith was going well until this week. He was doing well until this week. I still like Rhys Carey. In fact, against the Bulls, I thought he was the only one who looked like... he could make an impression on him physically. Mm. When he was carrying, when some players were carrying into the South Africans, they just stood their ground. When Rhys Carey carries into the South Africans, they have to fall over. It's the only way they can stop him. You know, they have to take they have to take the hit and go backwards. You can't, it's very difficult to stop on the gain line. I know he's, he's not the best carrier in the world, but he's that level of physicality, if you know what I mean. So I think he should make the squad, but with Wyn Jones as well and Nicky Lloyd-Smith and, you know, other people making their claim, he might find himself out. But I mean, like you, as we have talked about before, he's not out and out first choice at the Blues. So it would be much easier if he wasn't outside the international window, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, it's a bit of a shambles. Any other players from any position kind of caught your eye in the first opening weeks? Ref?
Oh, sorry, I thought you were asking Dan. Jonah Holmes, we mentioned him already. Not too much. I mean, it's difficult to impress in a side that's playing poorly. So, the Ospreys were going okay, so it'd be great to see Hans come back. I mean, he's automatically back, just by being upright. Let's hope nothing happens to him in the next fortnight. And I think someone else who's, I think, looked good in a relatively poor playing side is Tomas Williams.
Yeah, that's the one for me. I mean, it's no secret how big of a fan of him I am, but I just feel like this autumn he needs to run at nine. You know, we've mucked around for 2 years under Pivak, not knowing who the best nine is. On the 2 years, and yeah, I think this is the one. It's like, give him a run. If he gets found out, he gets found out. If there's enough there to work with it, or if he has a flyer, then brilliant. You've found your nine. But I don't think we gain anything by picking him 1 week, Hardy the next, and
you might get that opportunity because Kieran Hardy's been off form. So unless Gareth Davis is going to get his turn for some reason, then it should probably be Tomas. Of the three, I mean, Gareth hasn't been on the pitch, so you can't really say anything yet. But of the two that have played rugby so far, Tomas has been way better than way better than Kieran Hardy. I'd go so far as to say Roger Williams has been better than Kieran Hardy as well.
Yeah, I think, like we said, over the last couple of weeks, Hardy's definitely hit a rough patch of form, and the last place you want to be trying to regain that is against New Zealand.
It doesn't make sense really when Dwayne Peel taking over. Like, you'd imagine that the nines at the club would flourish under someone.
True, but I think form is form, isn't it? You know, good players have
possibly
bad runs of form, and I think it was before that. I think he had a really bad game for Wales against Argentina, and
good point.
And I think, you know, but with that, I'm sure I'm sure it'll come back and that's, you know, we are lucky in as much as there are some good options at nine. But for me, you're right. This is the time where it's a bit more clear cut than it has been at any point beforehand. Right, let's have a quick look at the fixtures next week and make some predictions, which I'm sure Dan will get right again ahead of next week's pod. Right, talk amongst yourselves while I frantically dig up the fixture list. We have the Dragons. Dragons at home to the Stormers on Friday night. Is this back to earth with a bump for me, Dan?
Oh gosh, that's an interesting game. That one, isn't it?
Well, look, as long as they don't play utter garbage like the Ospreys, they won't be far off. And you know, the Stormers weren't unplayable. You know, you just have to not be crap in the first place. Like, keep your handling slick for a start, which is something the Ospreys couldn't. They couldn't pass in front of their own player to save their lives on Friday night. So, you know, they're obviously abrasive and hard, but you know, up front and everything. But they're not, they're not unbeatable. So as long as you turn up and give account of yourself, they're going to be in with a shout of winning that game, I think.
You've convinced me, Murph.
Get your cash on.
Yeah, Dragons win. There we are.
I do think this this Dragons pack looks considerably harder than it has done for a long period of time.
Next week they could bring Moriarty back, bring Ollie Griffiths back, fresh legs. And, you know, obviously there's not a lot of fresh depth in the front five, but so long as they're all you know, good to go next week. There's no reason why they can't. Just so long as they don't, you know, so long as you don't play as poorly as the Ospreys do, you're going to be in with a shout. Because against some teams, even though it was Ospreys at home, against some teams, that would have been a 40-pointer. You know, Leinster would have murdered you if you played at that. So, it's, although, like I say, although the Stormers were impressive, they're not, you know, they're not world beaters.
Right. Is it, you know, the back row at the Dragons, it's a good point, actually, that their breakdown work is looking quite good, isn't it? Quite this weekend in particular, the Welsh side struggled, which is a little bit odd. But yeah, I'm completely sold. I'm absolutely sold on the Dragons' win. No?
I think they're going to put 20 on them. Let's get on the Dragons train. Come on. Let's go for it. Best side in Wales. Let's
side in Wales. All right.
Let's make that prediction now.
I'm going to go Stormers by six.
Hey. All right.
And hopefully, my predictions are notoriously wrong. Was it last year I predicted an England Grand Slam? Let's hope these continue in this vein. Right. Leinster versus Scarlets. Like we said, I can't see anything other than a handsome Leinster win there. I think the Scarlets, you know, it's about not, you can't go into it the damage limitation mindset, but stay in the game for as long as possible.
Yes, it's a save faith fixture, isn't it, really, after this, after today. Just really go out there and show some pride. Like, as a I haven't seen the game, but it sounds like they were garbage and it's unacceptable, you know. So good luck.
I reckon Leinster by 20 there, Dan.
Yeah, comfortably. Yeah, Leinster by 20. Yeah,
but I also think it might be a game where it's level after 60 minutes and it's three tries apiece or something like that. But Leinster have the ammunition on the bench to wrap it up towards the end. Cardiff against the Sharks Saturday night.
Sharks are, hang on, which is Sharks are the side that's actually been winning, isn't it? I get confused between the Sharks and the Stormers for some reason. The Lions are the weakest side of the four, aren't they? And then the Bulls and the Stormers are the stronger. But I think the Sharks have won some games, haven't they?
Yeah, so the Sharks...
they beat...
The Sharks beat the Ospreys, didn't they?
Oh, okay, I get it. That's exactly what I meant when I say I get the Sharks and the Stormers mixed up. Based on this week's form, Sharks are going to win that game. So,
would you like to change your prediction about the Dragons, considering we were talking about the wrong fucking side?
Are we? Who started this, me or you?
You did, but I hadn't realised you were wrong.
All right, okay. So who are they playing? The Sharks.
The Sharks beat the Ospreys.
No one's betting on these.
I know. The Sharks beat the Ospreys this week. And are playing Cardiff next week.
Yeah, right. So based on form from this weekend, Cardiff got no chance. Although, you know, I doubt if many teams are going to turn out as bad as the Ospreys did last week. But I think...
I know you said all that when we were predicting the Dragons.
Right, okay. Well,
the Stormers, for the record, drew with Edinburgh this weekend.
Okay. Right. Yeah, well, that's where they're playing next week. The Dragons are playing them next week.
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought they'd play the Ospreys. Is that what I
know.
Did?
Yeah.
Right, okay. It's a tough one for Cardiff because, you know, obviously Navidi. Yeah. And I don't think, I'm not sure about the number 8, Ratty, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
He played a lot in second row before moving to 8, didn't he? I've seen him have some good games, but it's those games when you're up against the big South African pack where I think it's a real education when you're kind of learning your trade at 8, I would say, or any position in the back five there. So yeah, it's tricky. I wouldn't be giving up on him because I know he'd earned some rave reviews, hadn't he? But it does feel like he's still cutting his teeth, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a heavy carrier, but he doesn't ever look like breaking a tackle. And there's certainly no possibility. It doesn't seem there's ever a possibility of an offload out of a tackle. From all the games I've seen him play so far. So I don't know. And just going back to the confusion over the teams, I think they should be forced to use the name of the city they're from. Yeah, so Natal Sharks would make it easier for me.
Right, we're going to do that from now on. It's Natal Sharks.
And one of them plays in Cape Town. Who's that? The Bulls. And then the other team's in Joburg.
The Bulls are Pretoria, aren't they?
Oh, are they? Okay. Yeah, who's in Cape Town? Stormers.
That's the Stormers.
Right, okay. Cape Town Stormers. That'll make it much easier for me. And the Natal Sharks. There you go. No, and Hauteng Lions. Am I correct on that one?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to use from now on. Otherwise, they just... I mean, they're nonsense bloody names anyway, let's be honest. They're no different from Dragons, Scarlets and Ospreys. It's all just American shite as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd much rather Cardiff, Swansea, Llanelli, Newport and get on with it and shut up.
It's not unthinkable that might be the case at some point in the not too distant future. Certainly with a couple of
but
them.
But it might be more difficult to persuade the South Africans.
I think you made a compelling argument, mate. I'd send you over there as some kind of spokesperson just to do it.
Yeah, cultural attaché.
Yeah, last one I missed out here. Benetton Ospreys is on Saturday afternoon actually as well. So that is in Italy. In the lovely city of Benetton.
The Benetton United colours of Benetton.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What? I tell you what, they really need to win that, the Ospreys. I think just to, like you say, it's a bit of a safe face after a really poor result this week. That actually could be quite an interesting game. It's certainly on paper. I think it could be one of the more interesting ones out of those.
Yeah. It's much more favourable than going away to Leinster, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I reckon they might grind out a result here. For some reason, I seem to think the Ospreys are going to... I think they've got a good coaching setup now. I think Booth is moving them in the right direction. And I see it as being... having not seen the game, I would see it as potentially a bump in the road rather than the wheels are coming off. And I think they're going to bounce back with a sneaky two-point win over Benetton.
Yeah, I think there's too many quality players there for them to turn out in like that again. You know, when you look at Dan Evans, Reese Webb, Gareth Anscombe, and then, you know, the top quality forwards there as well. I think there's probably... even if they play much better, Benetton are no pushover at home by
especially
any means.
Home,
so,
yeah.
But I don't think they repeat that performance at all myself.
Yeah, I'm going to go... I think that the Ospreys kind of have to win after that after that poor performance. And for me, a lot of it's going to come down to the front row, to be honest. The front row and the, that set piece over there. I was really surprised at how poor the Ospreys were against the Sharks. The Sharks completely had scrum dominance and forward dominance, not just scrums, but across that park. And coming back to the Cardiff game, that's the worry for me, is how dominant the Sharks were against the Ospreys, and we know that the Cardiff have struggled there. So, but yeah, coming back to Ospreys, I think it's a must-win game. So, I'd expect a totally different performance from them. Really, Toby Booth, I reckon, will be absolutely fuming.
There'll
be punches. Yeah, there'll be punches thrown in the change room there, I think.
Yeah, not at Alan Wynn, though.
No. Leave Alan Wynn. Yeah. Take Alan Wynn out of the room, put him next door.
He'd be on a heavy fitness session, Alan Wynn, this week.
Yeah.
And when you say literally punches thrown, I don't think you mean literally punches
thrown. No.
not in this.
Maybe a polystyrene teacup will get through.
Yeah, exactly. Which seems a suitable time for us to finish. A big thanks to Murph and to Dan. A big thank you to you for listening again. And as always, a thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that over at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back next week with more confusion over teams, hopefully with some better results. And I'll be back in a new pair of jeans. Right, thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.